Hi, my name is Nada Ahmed, and I am your host for the Braving Innovation Podcast. I am passionate about helping teams and leaders reach their strategic ambitions through innovation. I believe every company and team can bring new products and services to market and achieve immense success in creating sustainable and profitable business models. All you need is an inclusive innovation mindset, have access to proven tools and strategies, and a robust network of mentors to guide you. Through this podcast, I bring to you inspiring stories, tips, and strategies from leaders all around the world so that you can excel on your journey as an entrepreneur, innovation leader, and investor. Welcome to Braving Innovation.
Today, I have the pleasure of hosting a conversation with a truly inspiring leader within the innovation space, Val Yonchev. He is the head of Red Hat Open Innovation Labs and Transformation Practice. I actually got to know Val a few months ago in a program that we did together and was fortunate enough to work closely with him in a working group. And I really got to experience his leadership firsthand, his sense of purpose, his clarity and passion. He is really a thought leader in the innovation space and a master at orchestrating teams to collaborate and really perform at their highest level. I think the thing I liked about him most was that he was just very generous and giving in terms of his feedback. It was always very thoughtful and enriching, not only to me, but to the entire team. And he's really someone who brings his all to work, to discover and build better ways of leading people and organizations and helping customers innovate and transform. So as you all can see, I'm a big fan and I cannot wait to dive into the topics of innovation, collaboration, and transformation with you. Welcome, Val.
Thanks for the kind words and the introduction, Nada.
So here we have a tradition here at Braving Innovation. One of the first questions that we ask our guests is, tell us about a time when you had to be really brave and really overcome fear and go for something, do something, take a leap, or maybe not do something.
That's a really revealing question, I guess, for many people. I think for maybe hopefully a lot of your listeners and viewers, it's probably something that they do quite often, potentially sometimes even every day. In my case, one thing that was really, really big, life-changing, for both me and my family was when we decided to move house to Belgium a few years back. My first son was already born. He was a year and a half, and we had to leave an established life back in Bulgaria and take a leap of faith and jump to try something new in Belgium, where we currently live. That was about, I think, 17 years ago, more or less, maybe more. And so in the meantime, already a second son, and obviously things have worked out quite well, but it was a big jump in the unknown.
Had you, up till that point, was that kind of the first time you moved, or had you lived most of your life in Bulgaria?
I lived most of my life in Bulgaria. I was working internationally for a few years before the move, but yeah, we were kind of thinking about settling, and we even bought an apartment a few months before we made the decision to move. We still have that apartment and we visit once a year to make sure it's still there.
So what was it that you were scared about when you were moving?
Well, it's everything, you know, culture, change in work environment, completely new things, potentially starting new career path. So it was everything you could be afraid of. And with a small child, it's even more complex. It's one thing if you're alone or if you're together with a partner. Mm-hmm. When you have a small child and you move to a country where you don't even speak the language, it's scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. But you don't regret it?
Not for a minute. I can't remember one of those decisions I took in a moment where I had to be brave that I regret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess it explains then why you are also in the innovation space, because it is also a space where it requires us to take some risks. You know, it requires us to make a decision, even if we're scared, even if there's a lot of uncertainty. So you work at Red Hat, which is really a company that's taken open source and made it into a global phenomenon. It's really been a pioneer in this space, and I think really a pioneer in terms of innovation, in terms of making open source into a product from just being a project and then a sustainable business where you have been quite profitable over the past couple of years. So I'd love to hear from you a little bit on the Red Hat journey, and then we can dive a little bit into your role as a head of Innovation Lab.
Yeah, sure. So I think Red Hat is as you pointed out, unique in the sense that we were pioneers in finding a business model behind open source out of the belief that open source is really the best way for innovating in technology, for driving technology forward, especially in places where humanity really needs it. And that belief has been driving the company for the past 27, 8 years, maybe it's already 29. I'm really bad with math, as you can see. That's why I left my career in accounting. So yeah, I think it is something that you cannot really take for granted. What open source was 20, 30 years ago is nothing like what it is today. And you have to constantly keep innovating, thinking about what's next, how we can combine open source together with new technologies, with new business domains in order for this business model to keep evolving. And we've been evolving the business model over time. It is still very much what it used to be, but it is evolving as, subscriptions was something very strange back in the days where software was coming in the boxes and you had to pay a price. Then the birth of the cloud and software as a service made subscription the dominant business model in the technology business. And I'm convinced this is now evolving and we'll see some new business models around it.
And, you know, you mentioned that sort of it's something that always needs to be evolved and changed. And now the cloud sort of phenomena is coming in. Everyone wants to move to the cloud. And what cloud, what are you seeing with your customers who maybe have a lot of their infrastructure today that is on-premise? And how does Red Hat or them being maybe on a Red Hat system allows them to maybe make that transition better?
Yeah, Red Hat made a very conscious choice a few years ago. I think it was around 2010, 2011. Again, I might be mixing up the days, but we took a decision to expand our portfolio, to move outside of the operating systems. A lot of people would know Red Hat as the Linux company if they have not been following the development of the company. Today, we're very much looking to power the modern cloud. And what Red Hat technology allows you to do is have cloud native development, even if you're developing first into your own data center or on servers that you have hosted somewhere. And it allows you to seemingly migrate between the cloud and on-premise. So maybe getting into a bit of a technical talk, but it essentially allows you to have what we call hybrid cloud. Mm-hmm. So you could choose when it makes sense to run some of your applications in the cloud, when it makes sense to keep it in-house somewhere.
So Red Hat has its own cloud services, kind of in competition with Microsoft and AWS?
Not in competition with. So, okay. So what we do is we provide the foundation technology on top of which developers can build really scalable applications. And they are available as a service in all of the big clouds. So you would find them in you could run OpenShift, which is one of the key cloud technologies of Red Hat. You could run it in Google Cloud. You can run it in Amazon. You could run it in Microsoft. There are dedicated managed cloud services around it. So you don't have to run it yourself. You can just consume it as a service. Okay. In all of the big clouds.
Yeah. So it's a service that you can run on any cloud.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have kind of just Red Hat just for the cloud services itself, but it would be in collaboration with another cloud platform.
Yes. So if you look at the modern technology space, there is no one technology to rule them all. There are technologies that are really foundational, and OpenShift Kubernetes as a Kubernetes distribution is one of those. Mm-hmm. But you really need to think about the whole ecosystem. You need to think about the full technology stack, what makes sense for your business. But ideally, it would also help you open the door to collaborate with other organizations to build an ecosystem. Well, all companies exist in an ecosystem. So the more of your ecosystem can leverage the same technology stack or build together, collaborate on new products, the more successful and the bigger potential you have for growth in your own organization. And we see this with a lot of strategic players from our customer base. They're really looking at, how do I build this ecosystem where I can bring the collaboration and connect all of these otherwise dispersed partners that I have so that we are becoming more intentional towards the market.
Hmm. And then most of your product is still available for free since it's open source and people can develop on it. Is that true? Or
all of the products we build are built upstream, as we call it. So they're built in open source communities, and a lot of organizations are using the upstream version. The benefit of using Red Hat or the Red Hat backed productized version of those project is the stability and security that is being backed by the engineering teams of Red Hat. So we make sure that whatever you use in terms of open source is tested, verified, and stable. And if some vulnerability becomes a thing or is discovered, we always make sure that we patch it as soon as possible. And so far, we've been really, really fast.
And I'm assuming that's then how you've managed to build a sustainable business. That's the business model, is that you get the whole support system, not just developing an open source platform that are sort of unregulated.
Yeah, the business model essentially is not selling the software. The software is free. What customers pay is the knowledge and the services that Red Hat has to offer, the support, should something go.
And that's quite different from most other players within the tech industry. So how do you think Red Hat has managed to succeed in this space?
It was quite different. I think a lot of players are now moving in this domain, and you would find similar subscription business models in all of the big tech companies. I think it was simply because we were the only company that was really betting bigger than anyone on open source, and we had to find a way where we protect the open source principles, what we truly believed open source is about, without allowing business interest to impact the communities, to impact the technology. I think that was really the thing that allowed us to find a business model that made us successful. And not to neglect the fact that we have brilliant engineers, we have brilliant teams that make these technologies more reliable, more stable, at a friction of the cost of back then what was enterprise technology.
I think that's super fascinating to see the journey of Red Hat. It's worth actually asking you, what is open source supposed to be and why is it so important?
Wow, that's a question worth another full episode of your podcast probably, but I think open source comes with a number of characteristics. I'm not going to dive into the details of all of them, but the transparency and inclusivity are really important things for us, for people who really believe and live open source. It allows everyone to contribute. Even if you're not a developer, you can contribute with providing feedback. And that is probably one of the few places, I would say even politics is not as democratic as open source is nowadays. Even in politics, you cannot do everything you're allowed to do in open source communities. That kind of self-regulating environment, everybody has a voice, everybody can be heard, is something I think a lot of our organizations and society in general can benefit from if we have more of it. Unfortunately, lately, we see a lot more of the opposite surrounding us.
Exactly. And I think what you speak to is really in the spirit of Red Hat in terms of collaboration. And so maybe shifting gears a little bit, you know, from the technical side to really one of the questions that we're still exploring in most organizations, and particularly organizations who are trying to build these teams from different parts of the companies and getting them to innovate together, because we have ever more complex problems to solve in the world today, but we still haven't been able to crack the code for collaboration. So I thought maybe there's something we can learn from Red Hat on how do you actually get teams to collaborate?
So that is a secret we keep in a safe, similar to other organizations. No, actually, there are books written about it. The Open Organization by our former CEO, Jim Whitehurst, is a really good start. I would say collaboration takes first and foremost purpose. A lot of the failures in terms of collaboration outside of the organizations, when you have to collaborate with other players, when we speak about ecosystems, there is lack of clarity on the purpose and how it serves all of us as an ecosystem. Unfortunately, a lot of organizations are still managed in a very traditional management style with, you know, the industrial era management, where the belief of a zero-sum game is really guiding people. Truly successful collaboration happens when you see that it's an infinite game, that there is not one game. There's no one pie. There are multiple pies out there. We don't need to split it. We need to figure out how to build more of those. So it starts with a really, really clear purpose. Why are we doing this? Beyond our individual organization, how does it benefit a group of people, society, or community out there? And then transparency in the relationship. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what label your t-shirt is carrying. It is all about how you contribute. What is the value that you're adding to this partnership, to this work that we're doing, to this product that we're building, or this project that we are starting together? And there's a reason why we articulated those five characteristics of open organizations. So Jim Whitehurst wrote about them in the Open Organization book: transparency, inclusivity, collaboration, adaptability, and community. So whenever you see successful collaboration in modern organizations, it is because of all of these happening in a very intentional way. And transparency for me is really foundational. If you're transparent, if you understand what motivates me while I'm doing certain things, if we have this common agreement on how we're going to collaborate in order to adapt towards the surrounding environment that keeps changing and the world keeps throwing all kind of curveballs at us. When we have that, it is a lot easier. So what we do quite often in our engagements is we ask people for a specific dress code. It starts with a specific dress code. And if you don't have a t-shirt, we'll give you one. But we don't want in any way anyone to stand out of the group because everybody is as good as his or her contributions and the value they're adding to the team.
Yeah, that's super powerful. And actually, I was at a conference last week where, you know, it was a startup conference called the Startup Extreme here in Norway. And there we didn't have sort of the traditional badges you get at conferences where you're like, I'm the speaker, I'm the investor, I'm the startup. It was like we were all told to dress in t-shirts and we just kind of got like a little hand bracelet that we're attendees. So no one kind of knew who was the investor, who was the startup, who was like the entrepreneur. And that just created an environment where you're a lot more open to just kind of reaching out, talking to people and really connecting at the human to human level. So what you're saying in just kind of that gesture of telling everyone, let's just wear t-shirts, it reduces those hierarchies and those kind of mindsets that we create around power.
The right? bias.
And the bias. Absolutely, the bias. And really what stood out to me from what you're saying is, you know, one, of course, you said the purpose is super important, that you get the team together around the purpose. And then secondly, around this infinite game. And I think that's really a big mind shift for most companies and more teams, because in the industrial era, we've been driven by competition and one-upping each other. And that's how our metric systems are based. That's how we're rewarded. So how do we actually create that shift in the companies? You know, I mean, I know you've managed to do it in Red Hat because it's really been with you from the beginning. But for established enterprises today who don't have that mindset and who have perhaps come from a very industrial background, how do you get them to adopt this mindset?
I wish I had a formula because I'm pretty sure the world needs it. We really don't. We really don't have a formula about it. It's all about thinking, adopting a servant leader approach at an organizational level. So in the Agile community, a servant leadership is a thing. I think it's about we elevate it at the organizational level. How does your organization serve the society, the ecosystem in which you are? How do you help everybody get better? All of those organizations that depend on you or organizations you work with, your partners, your suppliers, and your customers, how do you help them make progress, become a better version of themselves, as people in the UX community would say, or in the jobs to be done? Only then we would actually find this win-win environment that is the infinite game. And we're creating new markets. We're creating new ideas that are opening a completely different future for all of us.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's exactly what we need in the world today. I see there's someone who's put a link to the book that you suggested on open organization. If anyone has any more questions, please feel free to ask in the chat. So my next question was around, you know, you said serving the ecosystems and creating this mindset of we're not doing something just so that one of us could benefit, but the whole ecosystem could benefit. And that there'll be bigger gains for us as a whole. And I can imagine that kind of thinking also requires a very deep level of trust.
And I absolutely
think that's what it boils down to in the end.
Absolutely. And trust is something very, very different when you get outside of the personal level. So when you get at the organizational level, building trust between organizations, well, at the end, it does lay on the trust between individuals, between people. But because of how big our organizations are nowadays, you cannot really work in an environment where only two people or a group of people on both sides in both organizations trust each other. It's a matter of building a completely new way of trusting organizations. Japanese, I forgot the Japanese term, but there is a for quite a while, and it's now growing in popularity in the Western world, there's a new form of contracts, which I think there was a good Harvard Business Review article on relational contracts. And they're not written in legal language. They're not written on sheets of paper. You start with post-its and on the whiteboard, simply looking for how are we going to get better, all of us included here, what kind of progress we're looking to make and how are we going to get there. And then establishing all of the principles that will help you make decisions. And when you have that clarity on what is in it for us, what's the common purpose, what are the principles that will guide us in decisions that we cannot envision we may need to make. But as long as we respect those principles, we continue to move ahead aligned. That creates this organizational trust. And unfortunately, still not very popular. It's gaining popularity, but a lot of organizations, when we work together, they look at it a bit strange. And when we start formulating contracts in terms of outcomes, it's also very sensitive and very strange for people at first, because they cannot accept that you can commit on helping them make progress, build a new capability, or achieve a particular outcome without specifying, oh, it's going to be 15 screens and 3 green buttons and all of these other specs, which naturally we don't know what it would be.
So it's doing kind of this in-person post-it exercise with them. And what kind of questions are you asking them?
So there are several fixed questions, as I said, probably on top of my mind, I'll forget it, but we can link in the descriptions and in the comments to those. As I said, it's about the common purpose, what we're trying to achieve, what is the win-win, then what are the different benefits for each of the players, for each of the parties in the contract. The principles is a really, really important one. The guiding principles, or in the startup world, a lot of people call them first principles, the things that guide you even in decisions that you didn't know you have to make. And then establishing some minimum form of communication and collaboration. So who is going to be active on all sides, and putting all of this in some form. It can be virtual whiteboard, it can be a real whiteboard. That's what it matters, because it's not hiding all kind of tricky sentences on thousands and thousands of pages. We can always easily go back and refer to it and establish if we have drifted away. So that is something I can definitely recommend to people to look into.
That sounds very powerful, because what we usually traditionally end up doing in corporates is that we just take out our PowerPoints, our computers, and then we start talking around something that we've already sort of thought about, and not really creating that room to build not only trust, but also collaboration. Because we come with this assumption that trust is built over time and we can't build it in one day. But I can imagine by just doing this workshop the first day, and you're really talking from your heart about what's important to you, what kind of values do you care about, what is your goal here, and creating that arena where we can all talk openly and actually create trust. So I really like that. And I'd love to get the link for that so that we could post it for our community.
Sure thing.
Yeah. And so I thought maybe we could, you know, we are coming a little bit towards the end of our time here, but one more thing I wanted to touch on is something that I've seen you also talk about is team topologies. And I know that's also based on a book. And I thought maybe if you could give us like a brief 1-minute version of what does it actually mean, and why is it, has it become so important in particular for you in the work that you
do? Yeah. So I have to give recognition to the authors of Team Topologies with whom we are really, really close, Matthew Skeleton and Manuel Paiz. So in the 1-minute version would be, if you believe as I do, that the modern world has to be managed in a different way, that technology has to be built in a different way. It can be built in a different way, and we see some organizations do it really, really successful. It requires a new leadership, a new organizational patterns. And team topologies helps you answer what are those good principles that you can follow in order to build an organizational pattern that works for you. I'm not saying there is a unique model that you can borrow and apply and, you know, restructure from department X to department Y. That's not it. The principle is look at the smallest unit of value generation, and that's the team, not the people, but the team. And think about how you can deliver technology better using all of these patterns that are discussed in the book. This is based on years and years of research of successful organizations in the cloud native space, successful technology-driven organizations. And I have personally used it for several years now. And I don't see anything better in that space to guide leaders who want to build a successful technology organization or organization that relies for a big part in their products and their service offerings on technology.
So this is a specific way of working for tech teams.
Not necessarily only tech teams. You could really expand to all of the teams that you have in your organization. The logic is universal.
Okay, so it's and is it a way of kind of working together, sort of the sales team and the product development team?
Yeah, it is. It's a concept that allows you to abstract certain commonalities, things that would help all of the teams that are building products and build a kind of a platform. Let's call it platform. Well, it is called platform, but don't think about a technology platform. It can be really a combination of many different things, including ways of working and non-technology artifacts. Mm-hmm. So a platform that allows the team that are building for the real customer of your organization to focus on the real problem, on the real job to be done, all of their energy, all of their creativity without having to deal with the heavy lifting that they may need to do in order to make this idea reality. So a lot of these common things, they're just delivered from the platform to those teams so they can focus more of their time on what really matters.
So it's really a strong focus on kind of alignment and what we're trying to do here, what we're trying to achieve. Okay, definitely a book that I haven't read and I need to get my hands on. So thank you for that. And another thing I wanted to, before, you know, our time is running out, but I wanted to touch on is you mentioned that, you know, in your role, and I think in Red Hat generally, you've been used to working quite remote. And this has become now the standard for most organizations in the pandemic. And now post-pandemic, we're still trying to grapple with what's the future of work going to look like? And so maybe some reflections from you on how you see heading into this kind of hybrid work environment where we work a lot from home also, but also we need that face-to-face interaction.
I'm really happy the pandemic kind of shot all of the skeptics about remote working and distributed work. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of people that get overexcited and predict the future where we would never have human interactions. So I definitely hope this would not happen because we have never been a fully remote organization. Even though open source happens in fully remote distributed teams and in communities, they would still find opportunities in conferences or in other occasions to meet. And that human interaction is of critical importance. The most successful organizations I've seen, even those that say they're fully remote, they still have those human interactions on several occasions throughout the year. And nothing replaces this. So I think there are things that are better off remote, and there are things that still require the human interaction. And I hope we'll see a good balance in more organizations going forward.
Thank you so much, Val. This has been such a great conversation. I could go on a lot longer with you on many of these topics, but I think I have personally learned a lot. I mean, learned a lot about the inspiring history of Red Hat and open source and open innovation, you know, and I'm really looking forward to following your journey as a leader and also as a company on where Red Hat takes us into the future, really having that forward future leaning mindset and a flat organization and a new way of thinking around leadership. So thank you so much for joining us. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you, they can connect with you on LinkedIn. And please feel, for those of you watching the recording, feel free to post any questions that you have here. And either I or Val will try to get back to you on them.
For sure.
Thank you again for watching.
Thank you, Nada. It's always a joy talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Braving Innovation Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe so you do not miss any of our future episodes. Don't forget to leave us a review and share this podcast with others who might find it valuable. Thank you.